We'll call to order the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development. It is Monday, March 10th, and we're excited to be here. I am proud to announce that we have a quorum. And today we will be hearing Senate File number 1919 from Senator Herr, and then Senate File 2050 from Senator Nelson, and then four of my bills, namely Senate File number 1932, 1933, 1934, and 1967. As you can see, needless to say that we have a full agenda today, so we will be limiting all testifiers to 2 minutes. This was posted on the committee website, and all testifiers have been made aware of it. So the reason why I like to make sure that everyone knows exactly what's going on, so the whole idea is for you to supplement each other's testimony as opposed to repeat each other's testimony. So with that, if we don't have any questions, we are going to start first up with Senator Herr with Senate File number 1919. Senator Herr, welcome. Give us your overview, and then let's go to your testifiers. But I probably should ask, I'm going to go to our fiscal analyst, Ms. Noner, to kind of give us a sense of this bill and what we've done in the past. Ms. Noner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 1919 is proposing appropriation in fiscal year 2026 of $550,000 and another $550,000 in fiscal year 2027, both one-time appropriations from the Workforce Development Fund. In the past, in fiscal year 22-23, the International Institute received $700,000 from the Workforce Development Fund. And then in fiscal year 24-25, the International Institute received $1.1 million from the general fund.
Thank you so much. Now, Senator Herr, if you would give us an overview of the bill and then tell us which one of your testifiers you would like to go first, that'd be great. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for letting me start off this committee with Senate File 1919. I also want to thank Senator Pai and Senator House Lee for co-author with me in this bipartisan bill. The International Institute of Minnesota is an anchor organization for new Americans in our community. Located in St. Paul, the Institute has been successfully serving new Americans to our community for more than 105 years. The Institute helped new Americans, refugees, and immigrants integrate into our community. They help them realize their talent, ambition through outcome-based and date-driven programming through education, employment, and immigration services. They also welcome refugees, new arrivals to our state. And I'm just so proud of the Institute. I'm going to insert a little bit of my personal perspective and my own culture as a Southeast Asian. I have firsthand, and also a member of my community have heard firsthand in gaining the training to build our community, becoming leaders, getting skill trained, starting nonprofits and build businesses and becoming the facet of Minnesota, or the fabric of Minnesota as it is today, contribute a total of $35 million to our state economy. And also being that this is a 50-year celebration of Southeast Asia in Minnesota, the National Institute was the place where the first Hmong New Year was held in 1981. I just thought I'd put that, insert that part in for history's sake. And I know this is not a history committee, but. So in the past, the Institute served 5,709 new Americans with critical services that help new Americans move their lives forward. The Institute Medical Career Pathway, the funding request before us, has been recognized by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and National Organization for its ability to advance people in their careers. The medical pathway has employed almost 3,500 graduates in healthcare, contributing to the state's needs for healthcare workers. Many employers depend on the Institute to meet their need for well-trained and committed workers. I'll pass my time to our testifier that are here with me. To the left is Ms. Jane Grubman, Executive Director of the Institute, and to my right is Nicole Mattson and Ms. Grubman. You can start first.
Thank you so much. If you identify yourself for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Jane Grotman, the Executive Director of the International Institute in Minnesota.
And you can start your 2 minutes of testimony.
Great. So good morning, Chair Champion and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The International Institute of Minnesota provides comprehensive services to new Americans in our community with results-driven services as well. The direct appropriation that we received was invested in our medical careers pathway. This pathway has employed 3,495 graduates, most of them in the past two decades. 2,722 nursing assistants who were trained on-site at the Institute are now earning $20.78 an hour. 763 graduates advanced into higher positions in the medical field, most of them becoming two-year and four-year RNs, earning between $41 and $48 per hour. With this funding, we were able to increase the number of clients served in our pathway by 25%. With this first appropriation, our first appropriation, we projected to serve 350 individuals, 200 in the nursing assistant training program and 150 in the medical career advancement. And to date, we've enrolled 305 people. We still have almost 4 months, and we'll meet that target by the end of the grants cycle. We're also on track to produce 160 industry-recognized credentials and to employ 120 individuals. Last year, the nursing assistant program alone had a 97% graduation from the course, and of that 97%, 90% of the students were certified by the state of Minnesota. And of the 90% certified, 78% of them were employed. Also, the Institute graduates excel at staying in their jobs. They have an 80% one-year retention rate tracked over the past 5 years. This results in significant savings for long-term care providers and for hospitals in our community and improves patient care.
Thank you so very much. Your time is up, but if you have one last sentence, I'll give you that option. But remember, if there's anything you were not able to share with us, that you could certainly submit it to our committee administrator and we'll distribute it to the committee. Your last sentence.
The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce just recently released a new report that they did on immigration that states 60% of job and labor force growth in Minnesota this decade is from immigration and 90% of our population growth.
Thank you so very much. So if you'll wait, just in case the committee has some questions, but we're going to go to the second testifier, Ms. Mattson, who is the Vice President of Strategic Initiatives, Care Provider of Minnesota. Identify yourself for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Mattson from Care Providers of Minnesota, and we are a statewide association of over 1,000 senior care providers. These are employers who provide the full range of services and supports for older adults and others in need. The ability of our long-term care members to deliver high-quality care depends upon sufficient access to qualified caregivers and support staff. We rely on workforce development to prepare our future workforce, the nurses, nursing assistants, dietary aides, and other healthcare professionals who play an integral role in our care delivery system. And we know that today we have over 12,500 job vacancies in the long-term care sector alone, so our need for talent is great. We have a long history of collaboration with the International Institute. Our Care Providers of Minnesota Foundation, for example, has been a supporter of scholarships for International Institute students for over 15 years, and we have worked with them on initiatives to respond to the needs of the sector, mostly centered around the needs for nursing assistants and nurses. In an era where unemployment is low and labor force participation is already high, we need the contribution of every single worker. Mitigating barriers that prevent workers from working to their highest level of employment is crucial. Immigrants and refugees often face multiple barriers to employment, and as a result, their full talents can go underutilized. Customized training programs like language instruction and cultural support that International Institute provides are essential in addressing those concerns. They're readying people to enter our workforce today, and with their career advancement program, they're ensuring those individuals can develop and progress into their healthcare careers into the future. Immigrants and refugees are a valued talent pool for us, currently representing about 26% of the direct care workforce in the state. And our employer members have benefited greatly from the high quality talent the International Institute has developed.
Thank you so very much for your testimony. Again, the same thing I will repeat. If there's any additional information, you can give it to us by submitting it to Tom Melton. Any last sentence that you want us to hear?
I appreciate your time and encourage you to support this bill as it will have a direct impact on the workforce for long-term care and older adults.
Well said. All right. As you probably noticed, and I'll say this just for the record, that the senator has an opportunity to have unlimited time. We just ask that the senator be thoughtful and reasonable. And it's the other testifiers that are limited to 2 minutes, but the committee has the option of answering as many, asking as many questions as they delight. We will now go to Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I think this is a great bill. I really don't have any questions except to just say the presentation is just remarkable. The statistics, the numbers, you've targeted the areas most in need, good paying jobs. I love the career pathways and the fact that you've had such a success with multiple career pathways, credentials. I just think this is a great bill. Senator Herr, if you still have room, I'd love to sign on with you on this bill, but it's truly one of the best presentations I've heard. Very well done.
Thank you,
Excellent
Senator.
Bill.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Any other questions? Senator Pop.
Thank you, Chair Champion. I just wanted to say a few words in support of this bill. I'm proud to be a co-author on it. Thank you, Senator Herr, for leading on this bill. My family and I came to the United States as refugees in 1980. And I was only 4 years old, but I still remember that my dad, when we first came, after the first year, my dad went to work, and he would come home so proud because he was being productive. He wanted to integrate. He wanted to be a part of society. He wanted to make this his new home, and he would come home just being proud that he was now a contributing member of the community. Instead of the first year when we got here, he didn't know what to do with himself. You know, coming from a history of being a farmer who worked every day in the fields in Laos, and then all of a sudden you go into a period in which you're really not doing much, and you don't feel like you're you anymore because you no longer have that value of contributing something. And so I love programs like this because it gives immigrants and refugees the opportunity to aspire to do something and also to be a part of the community. They have dreams, and this gives them an opportunity to reach those goals and dreams. So I want to thank your center for doing the work that you do, and I greatly support this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Any other questions or comments before we allow Senator Herr to give us a closing statement before we lay Senate File number 1919 on the table for possible inclusion? Any? Seeing none, Senator Herr, your last comments.
Thank you. I appreciate the remark made by Senator Pah, my co-author, and also I'll definitely will add you and Senator Nelson. There's still room for two, so any other second requests, I definitely will have one more room to add. This is an excellent program, as you heard me testify, say in my first introductory. It benefit people, it lead them to become contributing member of society and also become taxpayers as well by put them as part of the pathway. We live in an organized society, a modern society, take organization and organize. So having a pathway or having some trained skill will carry us forward and get people transition from their whatever circumstance they came from overseas to be ready for today's society with quality service. So thank you for supporting Senate File 1919.
Thank you. With that being said, Senate File number 1919 will be laid over for possible inclusion. I noticed that I should have said to Senator Hurd that we'll have brief comments, but you noticed that he, no, we love you, Senator Hurd. All right, we will now go on to Senate file number 2050, Senator Nelson. And as you all are getting situated, I'm going to ask Ms. Noner to give us a fiscal picture as pertains to Senate file 2050. Ms. Noner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate file 2050 is appropriating $627,000 in fiscal year 2026 for the Community and Economic Development Associates organization. And in the past, in fiscal year 2024, they received the same amount, so $627,000 one-time funding, and also from the general fund.
Thank you so much. With that being said, Senator Nelson, if you give us an overview, and then we can go to your first testifier that's here in person, and then it's my understanding you may have a couple testifiers that are appearing virtually. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for hearing Senate File 2050. Also, I'd like to thank my co-sponsors, bipartisan bill, Senators Hochschild, Dreheim, and Johnson. So this is a bill that was highly successful. It was a one-time appropriation. Of course, we'd like to see this success continue to other communities as well. The bill appropriates $627,000 one-time money in fiscal year 2026. I believe it's available for both years of the biennium, from the general fund to a deed, and it is for a grant for Community Economic Development Associates. So, previous bill, we just talked about how important it is that Minnesotans get trained for jobs. This bill is how do we make sure those jobs are in communities that need them? And this is particularly focused on rural Minnesota, communities with 3,000 or fewer people. And the bill funds two things. One, technical assistance for our small communities to help drive and bring those jobs to their districts, to their cities, particularly that fit them the best. And then also it provides grants for those new businesses to help get them started. It supports rural economic growth, equitable access to development resources, encourages job creation and business growth, and of course it enhances community sustainability by tailoring the programs to the individual communities that receive the awards. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifier who can give you a little bit more details and also some supporting successes.
Thank you so very much, Senator Nelson. We'll go to Amy Schaefer, who is with Rural Capacity Program Manager. If you can introduce yourself for the record and then provide your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Amy Schaefer. I'm the Rural Capacity Manager for Community and Economic Development Associates, known as CEDA. CEDA was founded in 1986 as a 501c3 nonprofit, originally serving southern Minnesota. Today, we serve communities all over greater Minnesota. One of the most powerful and impactful programs CEDA has created and operates is the Rural Capacity Program. This program gives Minnesota's smallest communities a real swing at the plate, providing technical assistance, expertise, and resources they often lack. Many rural towns don't have the staff or capacity to secure grants, develop economic strategies, or pursue key projects. This program fills that gap, ensuring no community is left behind in economic opportunity. The Rural Capacity Program drives economic revitalization in small cities across greater Minnesota. This program provides crucial technical assistance and financial support. Each of 20 cities with a population of 3,000 or less will receive up to 135 hours of technical assistance, totaling 2,700 CEDA staff hours, along with $13,500 apiece in funding, amounting to $270,000 invested directly into rural economic development. CEDA's collaboration with cities in round one led to notable achievements, including the creation of revolving loan programs, large grant applications such as the DNR grant in Buell and the USDA grant in Parker's Prairie, and the launch of business outreach, website integrations, childcare initiatives, and commercial facade programs. In many cases, the initial investment attracted additional private and public funding, amplifying the program's impact. We have seen firsthand that when communities are given even a small amount of dedicated time and resources, hope, excitement, and creativity flourish. With the right support, a nursing home can create a multi-generational childcare program, like in Buell, or an old bank can transform into a vibrant community center, such as in Danvers.
Thank you so very much. Your time is up, and it looks like, or sounds like, that you have some more things that you'd like to share. You can certainly submit some additional information. I will also point the committee to two handouts that were, it's a number of handouts that's in your packet from the Community and Economic Development Associates, so you can also refer to that information that's in your packet. With that being said, any questions for the, we have a couple more testifiers, I'm sorry. We will go to Julie Lammers, who's City Clerk Treasurer for the City of Vergas, who's appearing virtually. Are you there? I don't see her, so we will go past her to Beth Wusso. Beth, good to see you. If you will identify yourself for the record and correct me if I said your last name incorrectly, and then provide your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much for letting me speak today. Yes, you said my name correctly, Beth Wusso. I'm the city administrator for the city of Parker's Prairie. Parker's Prairie is a small city of just over 1,000 people. We also have a newly formed Economic Development Authority, which was established in January of 2024. We were fortunate enough to find CEDA, and we applied for the Rural Capacity Program Grant, or RCP, I call it. This grant provided us with $15,000 and 150 hours of technical assistance. Additionally, we had the access to some very talented individuals who work with economic development every day. Since January 2024, our EDA completed a housing study, established business subsidy guidelines, a revolving loan fund, and with the help of the RCP technical assistance hours, we submitted a grant application to USDA Rural Development. This grant will add to our revolving loan fund, which will be used to assist new business owners on their journey to success in Parker's Prairie. In a small city of just over 1,000 people, we have a limited staff size. In fact, I am the only full-time administrative staff member. Without the RCP, I would not have had the ability to submit the USDA Rural Development Grant application before its deadline, and our EDA would not have been as successful as we have so far. In 1 year, we have seen the establishment of 3 new businesses and have seen our city's growth blossom from 1 new household per year to 30 new housing units coming in 2025, and there is a plan in place for 30 more to be developed in 2026 and 2027. CEDA and the RCP have made a tremendous difference in the growth and stability of our community. We thank you for your continued support of the Rural Capacity Program and your support of Minnesota's small cities. Thank you
so very much. I appreciate you and appreciate you staying within that timeline. That was pretty good. That was pretty good, I will say. Members, any questions for Ms. Schaefer or Ms. Wusso or our Senate author? Any questions? Any questions? I do have a question. I noticed, Senator Nelson, that this is a request for funds from the general fund, and as you probably know, that we're probably going to be hard pressed to get any money from the general fund. So if you can speak to that. And then secondly, I see on line 1.10 that it talks about money can be used for economic development projects, grants to small communities across rural Minnesota. Who will be making those decisions and how those decisions made? And then last but certainly not least, I see on line 1.14 that there's an amount of $270,000 that may be used for economic development projects implementation in conjunction with technical assistance. So if one can talk a little bit about what that looks like and what that means, that would be great. Those are the three questions. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start with the easy one first. Well, it's not easy. The general fund is going to be highly competitive. There's no doubt about that. And I was working briefly with Ms. Fontaine to look at are there other programs that might be not quite so competitive with as far as the general fund. And I will continue to work with Ms. Fontaine about that. The first one I came up with would not have been a good fit. And so, but I'm not deterred. I will keep looking to see if there is a potential another source. But I would want to state that and I'll let my testifier speak to the $270,000. Of course, I believe that is the actual grants to get those projects that have been planned up and running. But I'll let her speak to that. And then also how the selection, she could speak to that as well, how those projects are selected. And then I'll have some final comments at the end.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefer. Please answer those two questions. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The $270,000 is a direct grant to the cities. It was $15,000 in round one. We did 18 cities. In round two, we're going to up it to 20 cities, so the amount would go to $13,500. That would be used for establishing a revolving loan fund or perhaps leveraging that funding as a match for these USDA or DNR grant or whatever larger grant would require a match. It has been used to provide feasibility studies for daycares. It's been used for commercial improvement programs, helping downtown businesses or any businesses really to shore up the structure of their facilities. So that's what the $270,000 went directly for. And then the cities applied via an application process. We were actually able to spend some time while we were waiting to implement the program and develop a database of contact information for every city under 3,000 in the state of Minnesota. They were all emailed. This information, we partnered with our collaborators like the Blandin Foundation, Smith Foundation, to really get the word out as well as we could. We have League of Minnesota Cities also helped us get the information out to other cities.
Thank you so very much. Any other questions? Senator Pa.
Thank you, Chair Champion. So the question I had is, what have you seen in providing technical assistance has been some of the top, maybe top three or four technical assistance needs of small businesses in rural areas?
Ms. Schaefer, to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, for example, the city of Buell has a nursing home that is experiencing a lot of extra space. They wanted to figure out a way to turn it parts of the nursing home into a child care facility. They needed to know how to do that. They had no idea how to start that. They are in the nursing home business. So our technical service or our technical assistance hours went to identifying how they, you know, the next steps that they needed to take. They settled on a feasibility study. They are currently moving into some design plans. Mm-hmm. So you really, in that instance, CETA staff just helped guide the process. We have also done lots of creating of things like revolving loan funds. They did do a USDA grant, which, like Beth had acknowledged, is a huge grant that requires a lot of extra time. So several grants have been done. But really just any technical, any sort of guidance that communities need, that they just, we don't know what we don't know, right? And if you're the only city clerk in a tiny little town, you don't have time to learn all of those extra things that will benefit your community. So it's really just coming in and doing that work.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Were you finished?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Pa, any follow-up before we go to Senator Nelson for any closing? Senator
yes, thank Pa. You, Chair Champion. Thank you for that response. And I thank you for all the handout. It's very informational. I love this program in the fact that you not only provide technical assistance, but that you provide some grants out to the businesses, especially for rural Minnesota, some of the small towns. That $15,000 makes a huge difference between a business who's going to be able to succeed or a business that's going to when they're looking out in the next 5 years, they don't know if they're gonna, their doors are still gonna stay open. Mm-hmm. And so I've traveled a lot in our rural Minnesota areas. I've always enjoyed the cafes, some of the small businesses around. But when I do see small businesses around, they really are the core of those towns. And so we do need to support our small towns. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other questions from the committee? Any other questions? Seeing none, Senator Nelson, for your final comments before we lay Senate file number 2050 on the table for possible inclusion. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and to my testifiers. This is really one of the really great successes out of the last biennium. The fact that we can tailor the economic development to the individual communities. Every community is so different. And as Senator Paugh said, not every committee has economic development or paid employees to dig through grants. We know they're not easy from the feds, for example. So I also like the fact that CETA helps with braiding funding from a variety of sources, whether it be grants from the federal level or revolving loan funds. All of these things I think are really helpful, and it's really an all hands on deck moment. Our smaller communities actually deserve and need this, but I think more importantly, I think this is a rural renaissance moment. As we look at the world today and people working remote from their home, wherever it is, to wherever their job is, I think a lot of folks would like to live in a rural community, but they also need to have a grocery store. They need to have daycare. And these kind of things can help. So I appreciate your interest, committee. Mr. Chair, I hope that you can see a way to get this into your bill. I'll work with Ms. Fontaine as well to see if there are other spots that are maybe not quite so highly competitive as that general fund. So thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Senator Nelson, and thank you to your testifiers. You. With that being said, Senate file number 2050 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much. Members, we will now go to Senate file number 1932. We're going to start off with Senator Muhammad chairing, and then I think we're going to Senator Dreheim is going to chair while I present.
You may begin, Senator Champion.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I have some brief comments. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate File Number 1932. This bill provides critical funding for Twin Cities Rise, a nonprofit in my district. And Twin Cities Rise, you know, they pioneered the pay-for-performance model in 1997 and has been transforming lives and strengthening the workforce for over 30 years. This pay for performance model states that this organization, Twin Cities Rise, is only paid when participants are placed and retained in jobs. And this model ensures accountability and results-driven funding. This initiative is more than just a job training program. They empower participants, build accountability, and provides a healthy pathway to financial independence. And Twin Cities Rise graduates experience an average income increase of nearly $30,000 upon job placement. So they have proven success and scalability. Just for an example, in 2024, Twin Cities Rise exceeded its pay-for-performance goals, demonstrating the model's effectiveness and scalability. So this program's success speaks for itself, making it a worthy investment. Last but certainly not least, when we think in terms of, you know, two last things, economic and community investment, the funding requested is not just an investment in individuals and family, but in Minnesota's economy as a whole. And so I now invite, if you will permit, after we hear from Ms. Noehner, I invite Emma Corey, who's the president and CEO of Twin Cities Rise, and Quentin Osgood, a Twin Cities Rise graduate and employee, to share their testimonies on the Twin Cities Rise model, outcomes, and the proposed impact of this funding. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Next, we'll go with Ms. Grunewald. So go over the numbers.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate File 1932 is appropriating $1 million in fiscal year 2026 and $1 million in fiscal year 2027. Those are both one time. And in the past, in fiscal year 2022 and 2023, Twin Cities Rise received $1.4 million from the Workforce Development Fund. And then in fiscal year 24 and 25, Twin Cities Rise received $2.4 million in one-time funds from the general fund.
Thank you, Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will now go to Emma Corey.
Great. Go ahead, Ms. Corey. You have 2 minutes. Please identify your name to the committee.
Emma Corey, President and CEO of Twin Cities Rise.
Proceed.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Champion, thank you for your past support for Twin Cities Rise. I ask for your strong support for this bill because it will provide the critical funding needed to expand our impact and continue transforming lives through personal empowerment, career training, and meaningful employment. 3 points that are critical for this funding. First, at TCR, we don't just help people find jobs. We support them to build lasting careers that impact their families and lead to financial independence. We call our participants risers, and they come to us with employable strengths, yet they are facing barriers such as long-term unemployment, housing instability, and past involvement with the justice system. A lack of confidence and knowledge in how to connect with Minnesota's employers who really need them. Yet, through our career training, personal empowerment approach at TCR, they leave our program earning 3 times their pre-program income, an average increase of nearly $30,000 each year. Second, we are a proven model. I won't go into it for time, as you mentioned it. We pioneered it back in 1997 and have been using this results-driven approach ever since. Third, I will say we offer a strong return on investment. For every $1 invested in TCR, the community sees a $7 return through higher tax contributions, reduced public assistance reliance, and lower justice system costs. Our one-year retention rate is 76%, exceeding the national average of 53%, meaning our graduates don't just find jobs, they stay employed, they come back at a year and ring that bell in our lobby so we can celebrate it. This also benefits our strong network of mission-aligned employer partners that help us create our pathways.
Thank you. And then next, we'll go with Mr. Quentin Osgood. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'm here to speak on the power that Twin Cities Rise is having in our community. I came to Twin Cities Rise as a student, broken, looking for employment, and found out that I already had a career. It said career criminal when I was able to learn how to look myself up on the computer. Well, Twin Cities Rise helped me to believe in my birthright, my core value, that I'm lovable, important, and valuable. If I believe that, I will be empowered, showered, to no longer be an emotional coward and think negative about me. Mm-hmm. So what Twin Cities Rise did was help me to believe in myself, but more importantly, to gain meaningful employment. I started teaching, I became a facilitator of the personal empowerment, emotional intelligence that we do, and started teaching that class in the same prison system that I used to be in, received an honorable discharge from the state of Minnesota and started teaching classes, and even worked with my PO and the judges that used to incarcerate me for years. Helped over 61 men get jobs in Ramsey County Workhouse, where I did 8 years back in the day when you can only do 8 months at one time. If they went through the class with me and they could get out through work release and come and find career-oriented jobs. We help people get meaningful employment, not just jobs. Get employment that you love and employment that you'll be at. I've been at my job, never had a job more than 8-9 months. I've been on my job for going on 21 years. But not just me. I know individuals that have received the Bush Fellows Award that are graduates of Twin Cities Rise, that have been to prison, that work for the county, Ramsey County, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do at Twin Cities Rise. We help individuals to realize the power and authority that they have and overcome the negative self, because we all know about subconscious thoughts and how negative experiences as children will hinder us. Found out that I'm not crazy, that I'm not stupid, and that I am lovable, important, and valuable. Therefore, I live.
Thank you. Members, questions for Senator Champion? Senator Pa?
Thank you, Chair Muhammad. So I was reading this. This looks really great. Pay for performance funding requests, right? And it says place participants in pay for performance qualifying jobs. I'm wondering, could you expand a little bit about what those jobs are? And typically, does that also mean that they also include like full benefits or not?
Ms. Corey would be the best, who is the Twin Cities Rise President and CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Senator Champion. Yes, Senator Farr, absolutely. Pay-for-performance jobs have a specific requirement from the state that is outlined in a statute. And yes, they have to be full-time benefit-paying positions. And so, again, this funding will allow us to increase the number. As we said, we over-exceeded this past year, and our hope is to be able to continue to do that.
Senator Paul, follow up?
I do. What kind of jobs are these typically?
Absolutely. So some of the...
Madam Chair.
You have to go through the chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Pahad, thank you for the question. Absolutely. Some of our, all of our career pathways are created with an employer in mind. So our diesel tech career pathway was created with the Minnesota Trucking Association. And so some of our some of our graduates are now with Ream Kentworth as diesel technicians. Right? Target is a big hirer of our call center. They helped us create the call center pathway. The facilities and maintenance, we have a partnership with the Minnesota Public Housing Association, and they hire our folks as because they come with OSHA certification and are ready to be able to help with whether it is facilities maintenance, HVAC, things like that. So we have a set of employers that we work with for each of our four career pathways.
Senator Paul?
Thank you. Thank you for answering the questions. I was impressed by some of the numbers that you gave here, that some of these jobs are in the six figures. So that's really nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really exciting to see these numbers. And also, there's just something to love about a riser, being called mm-hmm. a riser. Mm-hmm. And I like the partnership with the particular communities or particular workforce needs. And of course, it's just always exciting to see the empowerment of a job and a paycheck and the human dignity that goes with that. I just am curious. Have you ever considered expanding to other parts of the state?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you for your question, and so glad that you asked it. Actually, last budget year, Senator Putnam and also Representative Volgamat helped us on the EI bill that you will be hearing. I know Senator is supporting that bill, but our intent is to take empowerment training, emotional intelligence, personal empowerment training to St. Cloud. We have just begun, as I said, we start with employers, and so we have just begun conversations with CentraCare, that is the largest employer in central Minnesota. And so it is premature, but that conversation is happening actually this week.
And Madam Chair, if I can say Senator Nelson is not from St. Cloud, she's from Rochester, so she really was hoping that you would say Rochester.
And Rochester is next. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, Rochester, Wilma, Duluth are the others that are on our list.
Very good.
Senator thank Nelson, you. Follow.
I just want to say thank you. I'm very glad to hear that. I mean, this is really a highly successful program. And these are the kind of things that we want to just replicate across the state. So thank you, and I will keep my eyes out as you continue to expand and look into that Rochester area as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Champion, final comments.
Final words, thank you again for the opportunity to present the Twin Cities Rise bill. Thank you to the riser, and thank you to the president to talk about the importance of it. The last thing I want you to know is that it's more than just a job. Yes, a job is the best social program you can find, because there's dignity, there's opportunity, there's wealth building, it's all of it. And this particular program empowers participants, it builds accountability, and provides a pathway to financial independence, not to mention, but it creates opportunities so that they don't have to be on our social program, but also for child support and all the other benefits that comes about when individuals have financial independence. So thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee for indulging us this afternoon.
Thank you, and with that, Senate File 1932 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Senator Champion, you also have Senate File 1933.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've got three testifiers with you.
And Madam Chair, do we need to switch with Senator Dreheim as we look at the time?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Come try, switch with me. Senator Dreheim will take over the gavel.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, I should say now that we're switching here. Mr. Chair, as I'm preparing to do my talking points, if we could have Ms. Nonner sort of give us the history or the financial picture for Senate File number 1934.
Ms. Nonner, 1934, I think, is the bill. I think we're going to skip 1933 and come back to that. Is that right?
Is it 1933 or 1934?
I think you're on 34 right now for the testifiers.
Yes, so let's do 1934 then.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate File 1934 is appropriating $2 million to, in fiscal year 2026 to African Economic Development Solutions, and that is from the general fund. And then in the past, in fiscal year 24-25, African Economic Development Solutions received $2 million in one-time funds from the general fund as well.
Senator Champion, to Senate File 1934.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And just before I get started, we recognize that any money coming from the general fund is going to be a challenge, so we acknowledge that immediately. But let me tell you a little about this bill. This bill provides African Economic Development Solutions with critical funds to support their work driving economic opportunities for African immigrants throughout Minnesota. Last year, as you can see in their provided annual report, which you should have that in your packet as well, this organization served over 1,000 clients, including small business lending, technical assistance, business consulting, community building, and other services. This bill, however, focuses on lending and technical assistance components of this organization's work. As we hear repeatedly in this committee, access to capital is a major barrier in Minnesota small businesses, and I'm proud of the work that they've done over the years to support hundreds, if not thousands, of entrepreneurs establish, build, and expand their dreams. We know that small businesses are the backbone of our economy. More about this program, it offers small and medium-sized loans with a repayment history that exceeds much of the private lending market. These funds recirculate from one business to another. And before I turn it over to its visionary, I want to take the time to congratulate him and his team for successfully opening the Little Africa Plaza last year. This project was a redevelopment. They redeveloped a vacant building on Snellen Avenue here in St. Paul to be the new home, to be their new home, and to serve as an incubator for future small business growth. So this is a great example of the kinds of public-private partnerships, including funds approved by this legislature that I've been that they've been working on for over a decade now to invest in their cultural corridors, and I'm excited to see their progress going forward. With that being said, my first testifier will be the one and only Dr. Jean Gugulu, who is the founder, president, and CEO of African Economic Development Solutions.
Doctor, please state your name for the record, and reminder, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair, member of committee. Thank you, Chair,
champion for your outstanding support for the years. My name is Dr. Jean Galkalu, founder, president, and CEO of African Economic Development Solutions, AEDES. It is located at 678 Snelling Avenue North, St. Paul, Minnesota. I am privileged to present this to the Senate Committee, File 1934. With nearly 20 years of experience in economic development field, I have had the privilege of working with small businesses. My work has focused on supporting small business through training, technical assistance, and lending, and have been seen firsthand the impact of technical assistance and accessing loan fund that impacted our communities. According to Bruce Corey, 2015 published, nearly 67% of African immigrants don't have access to loan fund. That's a big numbers. Our mission is world building, economic, community, and social world building within African immigrant community in United States by providing cultural grounded support and service to businesses, leaders, and collaborations. AEDES was established as 501c3 in 2008 by Twin City African Immigrant Community Leaders. We target resources directly to provide business development training program, small business training, TA, lending, financial capability, and Little Africa creative placemaking. Thank you so much for your support in the past for this funding. For last year, what we got the funding for, we deployed.
Thank you. Do you have one last sentence to wrap up?
With last year funding, we created 68 jobs. We are grateful for your support.
Thank you very much. Next up, I hope I have this right, Mr. Betasuo.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes,
correct. Please state your name for the record and your title, and you also have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Palmata Budazo. I am the CEO and the founder of Frontier Transportation Services. I'm here to speak on the impact of EDS. Frontier Transportation Services currently provide type-through school bus transportation for 3 school districts, Anoka Hennepin School District, the Minneapolis Public School District, and Lionsgate Academy in Shoreview. When I started Frontier Transportation, I was unable to obtain a loan through a traditional lender as they required 3 years of working experience, which I didn't have at that time. I went to EDS and they provided me with $25,000. It started with the humble beginning of 6 vans and 5 employees. Within a few months, I went back and asked for $100,000. They provided me with that and employed about 25 people. In less than a year again, I went back asking for additional fund of $200,000, and they provided me with that with MGF included, and I was able to employ over 60 people at that time. 3 years ahead of time today, Frontier Transportation employs over 110 people and has over 140 vehicles operating within the Twin Cities, providing transportation for special need kids and regular kids for these 3 school districts. Without EDS, I won't be able to employ 110 individuals and also provide transportation for these needy school districts. Thank you.
Thank you. Quite a story. Thank you for sharing it. Senator Champion.
Just briefly, as another reminder, there's the annual report from 2024 that's in your packet, so make sure that you take a look at that if you have any additional questions. But if there are no questions from the committee, I just ask that you support this bill.
Thank you, Chair. Any questions, members? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is remarkable. Did you say, are all of the vans and employees involved in providing transportation for the school district? I want to just hear what that success is, like what area, what business that is. Yes.
Say, Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, then answer the question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, yes, correct. We provide school transportation for these 3 school districts, especially special need kids. Some of them are HHM students that are outside of the district. Some of them are in district. So, yes, we provide transportation. And most of the people that we hire our drivers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and congratulations. Very nicely done.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Senator Champion?
Briefly, just support the bill. We know that we have the challenge around general funds, but we'll try to figure that out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senate File 1934 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Champion, do you want to go to Senate File 1933 next?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. We are now going on to Senate File 1933, and my testifiers are coming forward. While they are getting settled, Mr. Chair, if it's okay to go to Ms. Noner so we can understand and see the financial picture, that would be great.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate File 1933 is appropriating $1.25 million in fiscal year 2026 and $1.25 million in fiscal year 2027, both one time, to the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Club. In the past, in fiscal year 24-25, the Alliance has received $2 million in one-time funds from the general fund. And I should have mentioned that Senate File 1933 is appropriating from the Workforce Development Fund.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one thing I want you to also know that on line 1.15, this grant requires a 25% match from non-state resources as well. So let me tell you, this appropriates funds to the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Club. It supports statewide youth job skills and career development programs at the club sites. The Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Club represents 67 Boys and Girls Club sites across Minnesota, serves over 30,000 kids ages 6 to 18, including sites in various locations like Red Lake, White Earth, when we think in terms of reservations, cities like Duluth, Little Falls, St. Cloud, Detroit Lakes, Bemidji, and the beloved Rochester, where Senator Nelson represents, and the Twin Cities. And specifically in the Twin Cities, there's St. Paul, East Side, West Side, Mount Airy near the Capitol, Minneapolis, the best area, North Side, and South Side, and Little Earth. And just briefly, the role of the Boys and Girls Club, they provide a safe and secure space for kids between school and home. They offer a variety of youth development services. They have this workforce development initiative that is focused on providing comprehensive programming on job exploration, skill building, and career development. It strengthens workforce readiness. One of the things that I believe to be important is that you have to start young in order to interest kids into a particular, you know, career options, or to at least tickle their fancy when it comes to what do they want to be in the future. And it also helps create a talent pipeline for local and national businesses. So with that being said, I'd like to go to Brian Donaldson, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Alliance, for his 2 minutes of testimony. And then we have CJ Jackson, who is the club director, named at Jerry Gamble's, which is in my district. So I'm sure that she's going to bring the noise and say how wonderful it is. And then we have our third testifier that will be introduced. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Mr. Donaldson, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Donaldson, I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. First, I want to thank Chair Champion for his ongoing support of Boys and Girls Clubs over the years. Senate File 1933 continues the long-standing partnership between the state, DEED, and Boys and Girls Clubs in Minnesota to assist youth in preparing for a career after high school. For over 15 years, Minnesota Boys and Girls Clubs and DEED have partnered to provide crucial youth workforce training. This established collaboration demonstrates a sustained and proven commitment to developing Minnesota's young workforce. Our partnership has a proven track record of equipping youth with skills needed for an evolving job market, and 95% of club teens believe that they have the necessary skills they need to be successful in the workplace. In the past year, the clubs have expanded to meet youth and their needs where they are, with 7 new clubs in communities like Black Duck, North Minneapolis, and Rochester. With this investment, we will be able to serve more youth in new communities and better help link up with targeted career pipeline partnerships and enhanced career path navigation. To tell us more about the Boys and Girls Club's youth workforce effectiveness and success in communities, I will turn to C.J. Jackson, Branch Director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities, Jerry Gamble's Club in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Very good on the time. Go ahead. Please state your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is C.J. Jackson. I'm the Senior Branch Director at Jerry Gamble Boys and Girls Club. Our Money Matters and Career Launch programs are providing young people with the skills and training needed to secure stable employment in their interest field. We have year-round programming and have started a workforce readiness pilot to help young people explore and get hands-on experience in how to retain employment in their career interest field. We have invested in a navigator tool called Pathways to Careers, where youth get real-time information about their interest field, shows them how much they make, the demand in the field, and is really opening their eyes to the power of the possibilities of the careers that they're interested in. And we started a workforce pilot at our club for young people. This type of funding helps support that and will help us be able to expand to other Twin Cities clubs.
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. And then I think up next we have, is it Young? Did I forget that?
Yes.
Please correct me and state your name for the record.
Kang Cha Zhang. Oh,
thank you.
Yep.
You have 2 minutes.
Before I continue, I want to thank the committee members and Mr. Chair for this opportunity. My name is Kang Cha Zhang. I've been a club member for more than 3 years. In those 3 years, I have learned new skill sets from the workforce development programs that the Boys and Girls Clubs have offered me. From career launch to money matters and diplomas to degrees, each teaching a different field. Events like Great Futures Fair and field trips to companies are able to connect us to jobs that we'd be passionate for in the future. After graduating high school, I knew what major I wanted to do because of the workforce development program. I'm a freshman in college majoring in HVAC with a Carrick scholarship that the club has helped me achieve. The workforce development programs do help youth and young adults like me succeed and discover careers at an early age. I am living proof. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good job. And very good. All three of you, excellent on the timing, by the way. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And HVAC, great field. I have a lot of friends that work in that. You can go anywhere in the state and find a job. So congratulations on your choice.
Thank you.
Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, I am prepared to answer any questions that the committee has before I give my closing statement.
Any questions, members?
Just one question.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. CJ, could you tell me, please, about one of the things that many of the Boys and Girls Clubs, in my neck of the woods anyway, also very much focus on reading. We know that is key. And I'm wondering if you can speak briefly about how you make sure that kids are reading or helping with that extra reading. Do you use the AmeriCorps reading recovery program, or just give me a couple sentences about what you do for reading?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson. So currently we are using the Sonde system to help youth catch up in their reading. We also have a licensed teacher that comes in, and she does a pullout with that. 22 of the staff are going through the Science of Reading program, the Letters program training, so that, we'll be graduating this May. That's actually the best part of working at the club, is helping kids be more confident in their reading.
Wonderful.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's just so important, and I'm glad to see that you're following through with that.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
Last thing that I'll say, I think it's a great investment, especially when we think in terms of our future. You know, they often say kids are our future, but I say kids are our present, because they can teach us things even at a very young age. And it's great to invest and pour into them so that they can see themselves and they can dream and they can think about their possibility. Sometimes they're not thinking about it, but sometimes being exposed to a field trip or a person will create a spark that can lead to a great internal flame. So thank you for the opportunity to talk about this initiative, and I would hope that we would support Senate File number 1933.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senate File 1933 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we're on to our last bill of the day, I believe. Senate File 1967. And Chair Champion, do you want to go to Ms. Nolner to...
Yes, so if we can go to Ms. Nolner, who could give us some background so we have the financial picture, and then I'll be happy to go from there.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 1967 is proposing appropriation of $1 million in fiscal year 2026 and $1 million in fiscal year 2027. And I don't see any one-time language, so assuming that is ongoing funding, and that is from the Workforce Development Fund. In the past, Change Starts with the Community has received $1 million from the Workforce Development Fund in fiscal year 2025.
Thank you.
And just for clarity, Mr. Chair, this would be one-time funding because we understand that we would not have any money in the base, so we understand that to be true.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to mention, it appears we have quite a few handouts, too.
That is correct.
This one, so.
There are a number of handouts that have been provided that would tell you more about them, the work that they've been doing, any other background that you would like to have about this wonderful initiative is there. We wanted to make sure that we were able to answer any and all questions that the committee would have, recognizing that my testifiers will only have 2 minutes of solid, impactful testimony that they're going to provide. But let me give you a sense of things about Change Starts with Community. There's a scripture that says, you know, a charity begins at home and then spreads abroad. If you want there to be change, it starts with you first. And it starts in an important place. And one of the missions of this great organization is that they use food as a violence prevention tool to build safe, healthy, and hopeful communities. And so the best violence prevention is a job. And so this is also a way to do two things. One, create jobs and opportunities for young people, but also provide families with food, especially in a place where there is a food desert. And the current funding inputs, which has been achieved thus far, when we think of workforce development and violence prevention success, over 90% of the youth remain employed. They're earning year-round $18 an hour of livable wages and career training. The youth work year-round during all school release days, as well as spring and summer breaks, and adults earn $25 an hour of livable wages. 17 out of the youth previously on probation successfully completed their Department of Corrections requirements, resulting in a 0% recidivism rate. The participants go through their workforce curriculum program and earn food handling, civil rights from Second Harvest and Minnesota DHS, and workforce completion certificates from Change Start with Community, creating professional pathways. It's a state-of-the-art community safety resource center. So in October, Change Starts with Community opened the only dedicated workforce-driven food security center on West Broadway inside of Shiloh Temple, with a portion of funding being $1 million in city of Minnesota funding. And so again, this facility serves as a training hub for workforce participants and a resource hub for the community, providing job stability, skill development, and economic mobility in North Minneapolis. As you will also see that the future funding outcomes with additional support, they look to expand their workforce opportunity and economic stability, ensuring employment pathways for BIPOC youth and adults and others. They hope to raise also the income levels and increase the number of hours that they can work. And they have a great collaboration with Cargill, where Cargill has already has already committed roughly $200,000 in funding, which we always talk about investments and public-private collaborations. And the wonderful thing about this is the scalability and increased violent prevention efforts. They will also want to expand their mental health resources as youth participate in on-site mental health check-ins, direct client assistance, and workforce development programs for high-risk individuals. And they've had proven success. I've talked about addressing the food security. They've served over 60,000 plus families annually through Shiloh Care's food shelf. And they're also participating in a youth-led agricultural hood urban garden program. So the young people are learning to learn where food comes from, the importance of agriculture, and so all this is important for when we think in terms of a long-term impact. So I'll start there, stop there. Notice I said I should start there, because change starts with community. So I'll go to the wonderful visionary, their executive director, Jalila Abdul Brown, who will give her 2 minutes of testimony. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the committee for me to set the groundwork here.
Thank you, Senator Champion. You have 2 minutes. Please state your name and your title for the record, please.
Hello, Mr. Chair, and hello, Senate committee members. My name is Jalila Abdul Brown, and I am the executive director of Change Starts with Community. Change Starts with Community is transforming the lives of youth and adults in North Minneapolis and Hennepin County by reducing violence through community workforce development. Since 2024, we've had a direct appropriation from this committee with Minnesota DEED to provide structured employment opportunities for youth and adults by keeping them out of the juvenile justice systems and prison systems and also off the streets. Our participants work on site at our newly built facility, which is a food shelf and a community safety center all in one that is located inside of Shiloh Temple on the busiest corridor, which is West Broadway in North Minneapolis. Participants engage and earn great wages, develop career skills, and contribute to their communities while tackling food insecurity, where North Minneapolis has the fifth largest food desert in America, and 40% of households of color are food insecure in the state of Minnesota. The 0% recidivism rate among youth proves that when we invest in our young people, they succeed. The $2 million appropriation would expand these life-changing opportunities. We did so well. We had a partnership with Hennepin County that they also just hired one of our youth. He is making about $65,000 annually. They just hired him last month. What this ensures us is that more youth and adults, when they gain financial independence, education, the workforce is better in the entire state. And also our public safety systems are better because of it. When people feel valued, they make more value to our society. As we already stated, we believe the best violence prevention is a job. This is a program that works. This is a program that prevents violence. We also have an agri-hood lot, and we have the home next door where youth will grow their food and then learn how to cook their food. But then also a lot of food that youth grew, they gave out to the community, which I thought was awesome. And you want to get a kid to eat a tomato, just let them grow it. Mm-hmm. This program works. It's a program that prevents violence. This is a program that I'm asking the Minnesota Senate will continue to fund. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, it's great for us to also have a young person here, Lorenzo Williams, who's a youth worker. He's with Change Starts with Community. And so if he could provide his 2 minutes of testimony on behalf of also the other young people that are present as well. They all wanted to say something, but I said not everyone can talk.
Okay.
So we are happy that they are here. So with that being said, Lorenzo Williams.
How you doing? Hello, Chair and Senators. My name is Lorenzo Williams, and I am 17 years old. I came here today to speak about how working with Change Starts with Community gave me a second chance for my future. I moved to Minnesota from Memphis in 2023 and quickly got involved with the wrong crowd. By September 2023, I was on Hennepin County Juvenile Probation and struggling in school. In July 2024, I joined Change Starts with Community Workforce Program, and everything changed. I began to work at Shiloh's Care Food Shelf and with agriculture, which gave me no downtown to get into any further trouble. I was able to pass the workforce curriculum and gain my food handling certificate, as well as interact with positive mentors. I got enrolled in driver's ed online and got my blue card to get my driver's permit. I also been on fun field trips and on Minnesota college tours, and all of this is fully funded by Change Starts Community. And now I'm off probation as of February 2025, with the program's help, I went from failing school with a D average to making A's and B's because they fought for me to receive tutoring service and help me every day. This program saved my future, and we need to continue funding for this workforce program so more youth like me can have a second chance. Thank you all.
Thank you. Very, very nice job there. Senator Champion?
And what I'd like to do, I know that he's not on the list, but I'd also like to have a couple minutes from Richard D. Howe, who is a bishop in the Pentecostal Assemblies of the World. I think it would be great to hear from him because this is a person who has an opportunity to see these young people coming through his church, but we recognize that they have their own work that they do. But it's good to just get another person who has laid eyes on these young people and can give us just a couple minutes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Yeah, please state your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Bishop Richard D. Howell, Jr. Thank you very, very much, Brother Chair, and thank you very much, Chairman Champion. It's such a joy to be here today. I think someone said victory has many fathers. And I tell you, to see change serve the community on the north side of Minneapolis has been such an impressive operation to see so many, and I mean so many young people, who have decided to give themselves a second chance by way of change start the community. Senator Champion, thank you very, very much. This program has been very successful. We have been 5 years in the making. Now, 5 years later, to see the results of what these young people can do, and can I just be a little faithful about this? Not only do they work for Change Starving Community, but they're also coming to church. And it's incredible to see young people that are just excited about church. I mean, I've never seen such a gang of people. Can I use that word softly? Those that really want to change their life morally, mentally, and socially. I think that I have to owe this to Change Serving Community for the fine work that they have put into these kids. And not only do they have fun and take field trips, they're actually working. They're not looking at their cell phones. They're actually working as they do a great work for the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Champion.
And Mr. Chair, Shiloh Temple is how old, Bishop Howell?
We were started in 1931, so I think we're 93 years old this year. Started from my grandparents many, many years ago when I wasn't with them, of course. But I started pastoring in 1984, but 1931 was our beginning date.
So I just wanted that context and see another trusted adult where kids can come and learn something. And we recognize that there's the separation with Change Start with community, but it's in their building. It's good for them to be able to have that interaction. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me and allowing for Bishop Howe to come up and say a couple words.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Champion, and thank you. Questions, Sarah Paul.
Thank you, Chair Draham. So I actually don't have a question, but I do want to just make a comment first. I guess want to say thank you so much to Senator Champion for bringing this bill forward. And you guys couldn't have a better champion than Senator Champion, truly. But I want to say thank you to all the young people who came out today.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming out. Sometimes I think our young people don't feel like they make a difference, but you do. I want to tell you that today, showing up, advocating for youth programs and youth investments, you not only impact the people that are in the same program with you, but you literally impact so many young people across the state's lives in making sure that we invest in young people. So just know that you're powerful and that you make a difference. I agree with the executive director. I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but when you said—
Jalila Abdul-Brown.
Yes. When you said that, there are many things that are affecting young people, and one of the things in your packet here says that housing insecurity and transportation barriers are one thing that's really impacting the participation of young people in this program. And I agree with you that in order for us to make sure that young people can succeed, we have to also look at not just one thing, but look at everything that impacts their lives. And so thank you for the good work that you do. And thank you for recognizing the barriers and challenges our young people go through and also sharing those barriers with us so we recognize those things.
Thank you, Senator Pott. Any other comments, questions from members? Thank you, Senator Champion. Any closing comments?
I'm just urging the committee to, you know, pass this important, you know, workforce appropriation. We know that our budget is always going to be tight, but there are sometimes investments that we can make in certain programs where we get a return on our investment that goes beyond the specific dollar amount. It becomes a multiplier. This is one of those programs. And so I just thank you all for just listening to this presentation. And with that, if Mr. Chair, we can lay it over for possible inclusion, and at the time that we put the bill together, I would hope that this is one of the bills we select.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Well done. Thank you, testifiers. Very good job. I mean, you hit all three for me. You got the faith, the food, and work, which is fantastic. So. But with that, we're going to lay Senate File 1967 over for possible inclusion. Senator Champion, it's your committee. You're
in the chair right now, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well. Members, that concludes our business for this meeting. Our next hearing will be on Wednesday, March 12th. I will mention this on Wednesday as well, but please note we will not have a Jobs Committee hearing next Monday, a week from today, March 17th. With that, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.